From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, it is Thursday, August 29th. Good afternoon, and welcome to this edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. All right, coming up on today's program, one of Kamala Harris's latest ads touts her being tough on the border, and all the while it features Donald Trump's border wall in the background. She's just trying to put forth a false narrative. But what we have taking place now in reality is a group of armed Venezuelan gang members in an apartment complex in a Denver suburb. I suppose that footage probably wouldn't work in her ad.
Fortunately, some of these criminal elements have come up with the migrants. my understanding that Venezuela does not share criminal histories with the United States, and so it's very difficult to vet them at the border, yet they've been allowed to come in anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to vet them at the border when you're not vetting them at the border. That was Mike Kaufman, mayor of Aurora, Colorado, earlier today on Fox 31 Denver. He was responding to the alleged gang violence there in his city. I'll be discussing what's been happening there in Aurora when I'm joined here in just a few moments by West Virginia Congressman Alex Mooney. We'll also talk about the false narrative that Democrats have been pushing with regard to Kamala Harris and her tough stance on the border. And speaking of narrative pushing, there continues to be a great deal of fallout over the letter that Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg sent regarding the pressure that his company received from the Biden administration to censor speech that didn't fit the narrative that the administration wanted. Well, I'll be joined later in the program by Dr. Jay Bhattacharya to talk about the effects that the censorship had on how America responded to COVID. Very important that viewpoints remain free. We'll be discussing that with him a little bit later. And speaking of free speech, the nation's largest association of Christian communicators has filed a complaint in opposition to the Johnson Amendment. That's a provision in the U.S. tax code that effectively muzzles nonprofits, which of course includes churches, but it muzzles them when it comes to speech that could be potentially considered political. Well, I'll be joined later in the program with Michael Ferris, who's the general counsel of the National Religious Broadcasters, who are now going after the Johnson Amendment. Also on the program today, we'll discuss an effort to get more states in on declaring February 7th through the 14th as National Marriage Week. You may be surprised to hear just how many did so last year. So as always, we've got a lot coming your way on the program today. Our website, TonyPerkins.com. And as always, tons of resources are available there for you. And at least for the time being, not the least of which is a link to Family Research Council's 2024 election survey. I'm sure you are extremely concerned with the direction our country is headed. And for that reason, we're asking you to take the 2024 election survey. We're asking you to stand for faith, family, and freedom. We're asking you to let us know about the issues that are most important to you during this election season. And you can input your information, your thoughts on that, by simply texting the word election to 67742. And we encourage you to do so and participate with us. All right, let's jump into the details of the program today. In the city of Aurora, Colorado, yesterday, they confirmed what they refer to as components of the Venezuelan gang TDA and said that they're operating there. But they also said that reports of TDA's influence in Aurora are isolated. Of course, we all know that the statement comes as troubling surveillance footage of that gang, heavily armed men, handguns and the likes, traversing through an apartment complex there in the Aurora, the suburb of Denver. That image would probably be more accurate in describing where Kamala Harris is when it comes to the southern border. Now, let that sink in. There's a good imagery where Kamala Harris stands on border security, not standing on the border with Donald Trump's wall in the background, which, of course, she actually used that in an ad. Amazing. But certainly what's happening in Denver is of great, great, great concern, and it in many regards is a direct result of this administration, including Kamala Harris, and their policies on the border. Well, joining me now to discuss this and more by phone is Congressman Alex Mooney. He proudly represents the 2nd District of West Virginia. Congressman Mooney, great to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Great to be with you again.
Well, listen, what's your reaction? We'll start with what's happening in Aurora, Colorado, and move on from there. What's your reaction to it?
Well, let's remind your listeners that the president of Venezuela is an open communist. He despises America and everything we stand for as people of faith and free markets. Even the countries around him, he lost the election just 2 weeks ago. He lost his election, but declared it invalid, won't release the results, and won't leave as president. So clearly he wants to harm America. And you have a completely open border that anyone can go through, drug dealers, criminals, people who want economic asylum. Like, the bottom line is we have a system where people can come here legally. There's ports of entry. A lot of people have come here illegally over the years. But when, you know, criminals, drug dealers, gangs see an open border, a president and Vice President Kamala Harris who refuse to close it, they're going to take advantage of it. And I think this is just the beginning, what you're seeing. I think there are sleeper cells that have come in from Iran and other places. We have Kamala Harris and President Biden have jeopardized our country intentionally. And I did a little research before I called in, Jody. On March 24th of 2021, President Biden said, as reported by the Associated Press, he said, quote, "I've asked her, the Vice President, Kamala Harris, today, because she's the most qualified person to do it, to lead our efforts with Mexico and the Northern Triangle, stemming the movement of so many folks, stemming the migration to our southern border," close quotes. So the mainstream media these days is trying to downplay her role. She was put in charge of this 3 years ago. She is directly responsible for what's happening. It's complete lawlessness and chaos, and it's intentional by the leaders of our country right now.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was getting to by saying what's happening in Aurora and other places is more descriptive of her policy on the southern border than her standing with Trump's wall in the background, which is just unbelievably offensive. But look, you and I both know this is not just happening in Colorado. I mean, even the Venezuelan gang that is in Colorado now, they've got their foothold all across the country, New York and Texas.
Right.
And we've all seen how this border crisis now literally is making every state a border state. And what we're seeing right now could just be a preview of much more to come. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely it is. They've been pouring in. They continue to pour in. Anybody, and like I said, it's intentional, and they can profit now. They can traffic drugs. They can traffic human beings. They can traffic arms because nobody's protecting our border. So the gangs can get more powerful now, more money. They're not being fought. And, yeah, it's a real problem. I think you're going to see it more and more until we close our border. Like, criminals do evil things, but they're not stupid. They know when they can get away with, attacking people and trafficking and gang violence. The only way to stop it is to get tough on crime. So that's what they're doing.
Yeah, get tough on crime, and in this case, get tough on the border. I mean, we've got to stop letting these people come in. It's just, you know, another thing, Congressman Mooney, that is interesting to me is Denver is a sanctuary city, but Aurora, a suburb, is being affected by it. So, you know, we've got to understand that these bad policies don't just impact the sanctuary cities or that type of thing. It spills over into everywhere that it is. And so all of us are at risk of being enormously impacted by the outcome of these horrible policies.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt. A sanctuary city invites the crime. I mean, all they're asking for is that if a criminal's arrested, that's an illegal immigrant, it gets reported to ICE and they get deported. That's all we're asking for. And look, if Congress would do their job, and, you know, I'm frustrated even with my own party sometimes as we lack the willpower to enforce our policies. But, you know, we support not giving taxpayer dollars to sanctuary cities. They should not get taxpayer dollars that flow through the federal government. But, you know, you have we keep passing our spending bills without any restrictions. So they're getting away with this stuff. We should assert ourselves. I think it's critical that we assert ourselves, but while we still have some time to do so. And I was going to mention also, Jody, you know, not only is this issue so important, but the secondary issue is how laws are made in this country. It's a constitutional crisis. You have a president and vice president, Kamala Harris, who think they can just ignore the law. They think that their job as president is to make up the law and do what they want, do whatever they feel like. They're not restricted by what the executive branch is supposed to do, which is only enforce the law. They're openly not enforcing the law. And this is really a question of, we have a law. You're supposed to deport people who are illegally. That's the law. You're supposed to secure the border. You're supposed to come legally. They simply ignore it. And this is, whether you're Republican or Democrat, doesn't matter. We have a country where we have a process by which laws are made. And for the president to just say, I can do whatever I feel like doing, ignore student debt, you know, not secure the border, that's really a problem for our system of government, in addition to what's happening, of course, with the invasion at the southern border.
And that raises a good question that I hear all the time. Why is there no accountability? Where is the checks and balances between the three branches of government? Why are they not being held accountable to uphold the law?
Yeah, I mean, you and I were there, and the power of the purse is the most important thing invested in the U.S. House of Representatives, where I serve and you served. And our chamber needs to guard that power and make sure that the people who elected us, we use it to restrict the president when they get out of control. And frankly, you're seeing Democrats don't really care, and weak Republicans who are just so afraid of a Democrat-caused government shutdown just cave in and give the Democrats all the money they want with no restrictions. And this is really, it just enables. It's like we're enabling Kamala Harris to have an open border because we don't punish them. The legislative branch really has to stand up for themselves. It's really a constitutional crisis here. The president has just assumed to themselves all these powers they don't have. And the House of Representatives has allowed it because we keep giving them the money. We just shouldn't give them the money. It's really that simple. But, it's a political battle. Yeah, it's a political battle. Mm-hmm.
It is, and it was an incredible honor serving with you in that capacity, Alex Mooney. Let me ask you this. I wish we had some more time. Of course, Kamala Harris now is trying to give the image that she's strong on the border, blah, blah. We've kind of dealt with that. What do you hope tonight? She's got the interview with CNN. What kind of questions would you hope would be asked of her? We've got about a minute left.
Oh, you know, just for her to be honest about her extreme positions, you know, that why she didn't secure the border all this time, and then why she supports abortion on demand for 9 months with taxpayer dollars and no parental consent. They are the extremist party when it comes to moral issues. Why they want men beating up on women in sports? Why won't they protect women in sports? You know, she is a radical. She's a complete radical. During the election, she's going to try and reinvent herself as some kind of a moderate, like Joe Biden pretended to do. But she's been nothing but an enabler of the most radical agenda this country's ever seen. So I just hope the interviewer doesn't let her get away with vague, non-committal answers or non-answers, and just admit it. Just admit, tell the truth. I hope she just tells the truth about her policies, that she supports these radical policies, and let the country make a decision.
Yeah, the American people deserve to know where she stands on all these issues. Thank you, Congressman Alex Mooney, one of my dear friends and great heroes in Congress. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, friends, coming up after the break, we've got much more coming your way, so stay tuned. You don't want to miss a bit of it. Mike Ferris is going to be joining us to discuss the Johnson Amendment. This is a major, massive issue. We'll be right back.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, filling in today for Tony. Thank you so much for joining us. I think probably most of you know that before joining the FRC team, I served in Congress for 8 years representing Georgia's 10th Congressional District. But prior to that, some of you may not know that I was a pastor for almost 30 years. And it was during that time that I personally encountered a conflict with what is known as the Johnson Amendment. And I ended up being one of 33 pastors across the country who challenged the Johnson Amendment, and one thing led to another, and that effectively is how I ended up going to Congress. But this is the Johnson Amendment is a provision in the U.S. tax code that effectively muzzles nonprofits, including churches. It, in essence, censors through intimidation what can and cannot be said from the pulpits for fear of potentially losing tax-exempt status or being sued or something to the like. I will say that during my time in Congress, twice we were able to get a repeal of the Johnson Amendment passed in the House of Representatives. Unfortunately, it failed both times in the Senate. And I readily admit the single biggest heartbreak and disappointment for me personally in leaving Congress was not being able to get that across the finish line, a repeal of the Johnson Amendment. But now the fight continues. Just yesterday, the nation's largest association of Christian communicators, NRB, stepped into the ring. And now joining me to talk about this by phone, we're having a little trouble with the video portion, but at least by phone, is Mike Ferris. He's the general counsel for the National Religious Broadcasters Association, as I mentioned, also known as NRB. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jody. Sorry about the video. I wish it was there.
Hey. Well, I wish it was there, too. But listen, I'm just glad you're here. You are one of the champions on all of this. And so let's just start with it. There may be some people out there. I shared a little bit about it, but lay out for us, if you would, the Johnson Amendment in a little bit more detail.
Sure. Lyndon Johnson, in 1954, was a U.S. senator running for re-election, didn't like the fact that some nonprofits in Texas were supporting his opponent in the primary election. And so he got Congress to insert into the Internal Revenue Code a provision that says nonprofits can't say what they want to say about candidates. Now, ironically, about 2 weeks later, after Congress passed it, he got a pastor of a Protestant church in Texas to circulate to all the Protestant churches in Texas that Lyndon Johnson was a good Christian man and running against a Catholic, and they should support the Protestant over the Catholic. So he violated the Johnson Amendment in his own campaign about 2 weeks later. But nonetheless, it is a muzzle on churches. We wouldn't have the First Amendment if the churches in Virginia hadn't been able to convince James Madison to support a Bill of Rights. That's where it came from, is the Baptist churches in Orange County and surrounding areas told James Madison, you want our votes, you better support a Bill of Rights. And so they were able to get that from him. And so we're trying to reinstate the original vision of America, where churches could preach the whole counsel of the Word of God and not stop at applying that to the issues that are facing us today. We think that churches and other nonprofits should be able to free to say whatever they want to say.
Absolutely, and thank you 1,000 times over for leading the charge on this at this point. I believe this is one of the reasons why so many churches are not engaged. So many pastors, as a result, so many Christians across the board are not engaged. They have been led to believe this erroneous narrative of separation church and state, that you cannot, as a church or as a pastor, from the scripture, deal with biblical truth that touches on, in fact, directly at sometimes, deals with political issues, that somehow that's illegal. It is not illegal, and that is the heart, the hub, the centerpiece of our First Amendment rights. Can you tell us a little bit about the complaint that was filed yesterday?
Sure. It's over 50 pages long, and what we detail in it is the massive number of nonprofit newspapers and Democrat-leaning churches that openly violate the Johnson Amendment on a regular basis. Philadelphia Inquirer, one of the largest newspapers in the country, is a nonprofit newspaper. It regularly endorses a full slate of Democrat candidates. Now, we make it very clear in the case, we think they have a constitutional right to do that. We think that the churches that are having Kamala Harris and have had Joe Biden and have Barack Obama, we think they have the right to do that. But we don't think it's a one-way right. We think it should be available and free for everybody. And so the pattern of discriminatory enforcement by the IRS is really prevalent, and it takes up a whole lot of the complaint. So we go in great detail. And we're contending that the IRS is not only is the law, just as it's written, a violation of free speech, but as enforced, it's discrimination and a denial of equal protection. So we're going after every possible constitutional angle. And, you know, we feel real good about our chances in the long run.
That sounds like a very, very sound strategy. And look, it would appear to me, but as a pastor, I used to receive threatening letters every election cycle. And so it sounds as though there's a potential in this upcoming election for the Johnson Amendment to be used as a weapon again. So what would you say to pastors and nonprofit leaders who might be tuning into this broadcast right now?
Well, first of all, they can say whatever they want to say about issues all day long, every day, and never be in violation of the Johnson Amendment. The only time that they're in violation of the Johnson Amendment is if they connect it to a candidate and say, this candidate is good or this candidate is bad on this issue. If you go to the point of supporting or opposing a candidate, you're risking the IRS coming after you. However, we think that that's constitutionally protected, and we're representing two brave churches, a Sand Spring Church from near Tyler, Texas, and First Baptist Wascom, Texas, our church plaintiffs, and then Intercessors for America and National Religious Broadcasters. Those are our four clients in the case, and we're contending we have the right to speak up, and we want people to speak up and stand up for what's right.
Thank you so much, Mike Ferris, General Counsel for this case with the National Religious Broadcasters Association. And we will be keeping a pulse on this, and look forward to hearing great results and outcomes. Thanks for joining us today on Washington Watch. We appreciate it. All right, after the break, we've got much more coming your way. National Marriage Week. Yes, we'll talk about that here in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to this edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, and we are thrilled to have you with us this afternoon. All right, God's Word tells us in various places, but I think of Hebrews 13:4, where it just boldly says that marriage should be honored by all. And as we know, good marriages are the bedrock of a strong culture, a strong society. In fact, there are many credible studies that tell us that strong marriages have healthier, wealthier, stronger families where the children thrive. And that is certainly worthy of honor. And to that end, I want to encourage you to mark your calendar for February 7th through the 14th. This is going to be referred to as National Marriage Week. That's February 7th through 14th. And it's a time where we can all celebrate the beauty of marriage as God intended. And hopefully we'll see half the states in America and more proclaim that week for marriage. So that's what my next guest is all about. He's working to make that happen. Joining me now is Jerry Angelo. He's the founder and president, CEO of Vanguard Marriage and Family Advocates. Jerry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thank you, Pastor and Congressman Heiss, for your service to our country and God's people. And thanks to Tony and the team for having me on the show today. We've been so excited for this.
Well, listen, we are honored to have you on and just so grateful for your role in moving this forward. You know, I think a lot of times a marriage issue these days kind of gets buried beneath a lot of, well, we can't anymore stand for this or that and the others, as though biblical marriage no longer matters. But it does matter, and you're carrying the water for that. Tell us about your marriage initiative.
Sure. So I'm with Vanguard Marriage and Family Advocates, and we focus on marriage, prayer, leadership, and events. And this particular narrative of the National Marriage Week that is coming up in February 7th through the 14th, basically, we are doing a push for all the governors in the United States of America to sign on to our movement for a healthy marriage proclamation. And basically, we just want to proclaim the benefits of marriage to everyone across the land, because just like you said in Hebrews 13:4, that marriage should be honored by all, and it's because it benefits everyone. So healthy marriages in a society will benefit the society, whether you're married or not. That's why it's worthy of honor, like you said. And so we're just trying to get that narrative out there. And it's kind of a first step of letting people know what the benefits of marriage are and how that can help our culture and how it can help not only our marriages, but our children and our families and our churches and our cities. And it just goes on from there. And I don't know if you know this or not, but there was a study done on marital wellness in business. And for every dollar that was invested in a company's marital wellness, those companies were seeing $3, $4, $6, $7 of return on that investment on their company's bottom line. And so it would do well for us to learn how to have strong marriages and families. And so these marriage proclamations, we're doing them, like I said, to get the narrative out, to see if we can get local congressmen, elected officials, governors to sign on to these marriage proclamations and just help us get the word out so that we can start doing the work on this.
What a great initiative. How many do you have so far signed up, and how many do you realistically anticipate that maybe will come on board?
Sure. The very first time I did it, it was like they said, hey, can you help us with this? The leadership at National Marriage Week. And we were like, sure. We got like one, and it was like just a few weeks out. So we got my home state of Missouri. And then this last February, we got five states to sign on. We got Secretary of State Ashcroft in our home state of Missouri did it. We had like a half a dozen local county commissioners doing it. Governor Stitt of Oklahoma signed one, and he gave us a great interview on Bot Radio Network. Governor Abbott of Texas helped us out. Governor Youngkin, Governor Reeves of Mississippi. So we got about five this year. I'm hoping to at least double or quadruple that number because we're getting a lot of good responses from that. So if there's some governors out there that want to honor the Lord and honor marriage, then we would love for them to contact us at marriageminute.org, or maybe contact you guys at the show to reach out and get in touch with us. So it's pretty exciting. Everybody is very encouraging on this. So yeah, I'd love to see that double, maybe 8 or 10 or 20 governors by next February. That'd be amazing.
It would. So what are people going to see when they go to the website? What are they going to see that might help them encourage their state legislators and governors to get on board?
Sure. So if you go to marriageminute.org and you click on the proclamations, we actually have sample proclamations out there for different venues. So if you're a pastor of a church, I've got one that's for your church. So you can have a pastor from the pulpit take a stand, maybe do a message and say, hey, marriage is important and we need to do something about that in our community. And we also have ones for folks in the county commission if they want to do that at a county level. And then we also have one at the state level for governors to sign or anybody on the cabinet. So when they go to our website, not only are you going to see the proclamations examples that you can download and modify, but we also have some free resources there from various other ministries and also some messages that we have. And so we want to strengthen and encourage marriage and family. And these proclamations are just one way that we're doing it. But we have a wealth of so many other tools there as well.
Well, I've been there myself, and the proclamations are great. One more time, give out that website.
Sure. MarriageMinute.org. We'd love to hear from you and see how we can help you. We'll work with you, pastors, legislators. We're also working on some Missouri Covenant Marriage Act in Missouri. We're doing a lot of things, and we
awesome.
Love the Lord, and we give him all the credit. And we'll work with anybody that wants to encourage marriage and family.
Thank you, Jerry Angelo with Vanguard Marriage and Family Advocates. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
Thank
All right,
you,
friends,
sir.
Don't go anywhere. Much more coming your way this next segment about Mark Zuckerberg. Boy, his letter from this week continues to make waves. We'll talk in depth about it right after the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, and we are glad to have you. And by just a way of reminder, don't forget our very important and informative Pray, Vote, Stand Summit is just around the corner. It's going to be taking place in Washington, D.C. on October 3rd through the 6th. And we would love to have you come join us. You can get more information. You can even register right now today by visiting the website PrayVoteStand.org. So we encourage you to do that right away, PrayVoteStand.org, and get more information. And we sure look forward to seeing you on October the 3rd. Also, I want to again announce to you in reference to our 2024 election survey. This is FRC's election survey. It's all about us hearing from you. It just gives us greater impact and influence and momentum as we declare what is most important to SageCons, to Christians, to people who are spiritually active and governance engaged. So we encourage you to go to our survey. Let us know what are the most important issues to you in this election cycle. You can fill out the survey by going simply texting the word election to 67742. That's election to 67742. All right, the fallout continues, and I think for some of us it's kind of remarkable and deeply encouraging that this fallout over Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg is still sending shockwaves. He sent this letter regarding the pressure that he and his company received from the Biden administration to censor speech that didn't fit the administration's narrative or cause. Now, while so much of the attention in all of this has been given to how Facebook put their thumb on the scale when it came to the 2020 elections, the impact that the Biden administration's pressure had on our country's approach to COVID should not be lost in this whole debate and discussion and investigation, especially when we have bureaucrats like we have at the World Health Organization who were just itching to have more control over our lives with any future pandemic that might just happen, be right around the corner. So now that the cat's out of the bag, the question is whether or not we're going to be any wiser moving forward. And joining me now to talk about this is Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. He's a professor of health policy at Stanford University and one of the authors behind the 2020 Great Barrington Declaration, which advocated for alternative approaches to COVID-19. Dr. Bhattacharya, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always an honor to have you, sir.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, you were unquestionably one of those who was on the tip of the spear in many ways during the pandemic. And you were saying things that other people like Dr. Fauci were frankly trying to shut down. Remind us of what we saw social media platforms doing during that pandemic.
So I wrote that Great Barrington Declaration with other authors from Harvard and Oxford. Tens of thousands of doctors and epidemiologists signed it. When we put the petition online, Facebook and Google both suppressed it. Like you couldn't post it. Google downplayed the rankings of it. Later, when I joined Twitter in 2021, I was put on a blacklist, which I found out when Elon Musk bought Twitter. And in the Missouri versus Biden court case that I'm a plaintiff in, the discovery in that showed direct emails from the White House itself, the Surgeon General's office, the CDC, to Facebook, ordering them effectively to censor my ideas, or ideas like what I would like to be put out.
Incredible. And so many of us during that time, I know we were hit with it. We were not on the tip of the spear to the extent you were, but we were shut down. And many of us. And, you know, you look at this, censoring speech in and of itself is horrifying and is bad enough and is un-American. But when silencing speech that could have been helpful during the pandemic is shut down, that even goes another step, don't you think?
Oh, Jody, it was terrible. It wasn't just me, of course, that was shut down. It was, as you said, millions of Americans were shut down. They tried to create this illusion that there was consensus behind the school closures, consensus behind the mask mandates, consensus behind the vaccine mandates, consensus there were no such thing as vaccine injuries, that the vaccine was effective at stopping you from getting and spreading COVID. Lie after lie after lie, that was the center of government policy. And the censorship industrial complex, the whole censorship machine that the Biden administration used, was designed to cement in place those crazy policies. All the harm that came from those policies might have been avoided had we had allowed to have free speech in those critical moments in 2020 and 2021.
Well, I'd like to bring up a couple of comments here and get your reaction to this. In response to Zuckerberg's letter that is continuing to make all the waves it is, the White House issued a statement of their own, and I'd like to get your response to some of this. First of all, they said, quote, when confronted with a deadly pandemic, this administration encouraged responsible actions to protect public health and safety. Okay, your response to that.
The administration got nearly everything wrong. They kept schools closed for a full year longer than our European counterparts, where there was already evidence that it was, you know, useless for controlling COVID and really deeply harmful to our kids. They enforced mask mandates when there was very little good evidence that they were going to be effective, and divided the population on the basis of that. They imposed vaccine mandates where a million people lost their jobs over vaccine mandates. Really changed the way the working class connected with public health, damaging vaccine confidence. The White House statement has it exactly backwards. They got public health wrong, and they needed the censorship of scientific debate in order to create this illusion that they were right when they weren't. They were scared of speech. Just to put it really fast, a short way, free speech is good for health. And when you take away free speech, you get bad outcomes in health.
Yes, that's a strong point, because I mean, when the free speech was taken away, also some medications that were seemingly very helpful were taken away, that all of it became politicized. Here's another statement from the White House that I, again, like to get your reaction to. They said, quote, our position has been clear and consistent. We believe tech companies and other private actors should take into account the effects their actions have on the American people while making independent choices about the information they present, end quote. All right, it sounds to me like the White House is saying that the Biden administration really knows what's better and that they had to step in because they know. Did they know what's best? Did even, for that matter, did the big tech know what's best?
No, I mean, no, the answer is no to both those questions, Jody. But the thing is, that's just such a deceptive little piece of propaganda there. What they're saying is that Twitter and Facebook and all that should make your responsible judgments what belongs online and what doesn't belong online. You know, to some extent, that's fine. You know, of course, they shouldn't have child porn and other kind of illegal material online. That's completely legitimate that would be restricted. But they are under a law called the Communication Decencies Act. Section 230 of that act basically says that they can't act as editors, that they're essentially a conduit for free speech. And if they act like editors, then they're liable for, you know, all the slander or whatever it gets said on the platforms. What the White House is saying is that you should act like an editor and put them really in a conundrum. If they act like an editor, then all of a sudden they're liable for all the terrible stuff that they post that are lies. It's online, so that you're going to have some of that. If they don't act like an editor, if they act like a free speech platform, then they get absolutely hammered by the White House. It wasn't voluntary action by the White House that led to these restrictions. It was pressure by the White House. A federal judge looking at this evidence made an analogy to Al Capone with Biden administration and the Al Capone role coming to the Facebook and Twitter saying, look, that's a nice business you got there. It'd be nasty if something were to happen to it.
Wow. Yeah, a little hint, hint, wink, wink, you better do as you're told or else. There are so many areas that was deceptive, misguiding, outright wrong. But one set of voices that was shut down in the midst of all these others we're talking about was the origins of COVID. And I mean, no one could talk about where this came from. How does that fit into the White House's claim that they were somehow doing everything they could to protect public safety and health?
The thing about COVID origins, the people who had an interest in suppressing it were actually a relatively small group of very powerful scientists, including Tony Fauci, because the allegation essentially is that Tony Fauci and the NIH funded the kind of research in Wuhan that very likely caused the pandemic, leading to the deaths of millions and trillions of dollars spent on the damage caused by the lockdowns, school closures, all this harm. If it's true that this funding, this decision to fund dangerous research really led to the pandemic, well, that's going to damage the reputations of Tony Fauci and others in the scientific community that were participating in it forever. And so if you look at the early days of the pandemic, January 2020, those folks spent the early days trying to cover up the possibility of a lab leak. And they deployed their resources and power within the media and in social media to try to make it seem as if the lab leak idea was a conspiracy, that if you were somehow racist against the Chinese, if you believe in a lab leak. And it wasn't a conspiracy. It was a real theory, a reality, and very likely true that the United States funded the Wuhan lab that very likely did the dangerous research that led to the pandemic. That's true. That's 100% true. It's documented and true that what I just said. It was a reputational protection of a very small number of very powerful scientific bureaucrats that was at stake here. And it's striking to me that to this day you still have a full political party, the Democratic Party, trying to protect the reputation of Tony Fauci. And I don't understand it. It's not a partisan thing. It's just a human thing.
Yeah, I mean, hearing what you're talking about, it just to me it demands more investigation. There has to be more than just protect a reputation. At least you would think so. All right, so let's go back to Zuckerberg here and the letter he sent. How does this letter potentially affect the court case that you're a part of?
Well, you know, actually, the court case, the discovery in that court case had found almost everything that's in the letter. In fact, the federal judges in the lower court, the appeals court, all looked at this evidentiary record that we developed in this Missouri versus Biden case and issued a preliminary injunction ordering the Biden administration to stop censoring social media content and basically stop contacting social media companies with the purpose of censoring. The case went to the Supreme Court, where we lost on standing, which means that apparently what the Supreme Court requires is an email from a government hack down to a social media company saying, censor Jay. We don't have such emails. What we have is the White House emails the social media company saying, censor ideas sort of like this, which is the kind of ideas I would say. And in a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court ruled that we don't have standing because the government was censoring ideas, not people. So the case went back down to the lower court. We don't no longer have the preliminary injunction in place, but we're going to get a chance to prove that we do actually have standing. As things stand, actually, I'm sorry to say, Jody, the First Amendment is a dead letter in the United States. If the government can go and censor ideas on social media without anybody having standing, well, what purpose does this First Amendment serve? It is an unenforceable dead letter. There is some action in Congress to like sort of fix this loophole, but the Supreme Court really messed up here, and the Biden administration, it's the worst administration on free speech in American history.
Yeah, maybe, absolutely. Maybe John Adams, where do ideas come from? What do people embrace if it's not ideas? I mean, how do you separate ideas from people and thereby judicially separate ideas from those who have standing? Unbelievable. Listen, our time is rapidly getting away from us, and I hate that, but you were one of the authors of the Great Barrington Declaration. Wouldn't our nation have benefited tremendously from considering even some of what you were proposing and others?
I mean, I can
and
make
yet
a
you were silenced.
Argument.
Yeah.
I mean, it was silent. I mean, I can make a theoretical argument about Jody, but it's very, very simple. Look what happened in Sweden. Sweden did not lock down. They didn't close schools for kids under 16. They had voluntary measures to try to protect vulnerable older people. You know, they made some mistakes early in the pandemic, but by and large, what happened is that they protected human life better than any other country in Europe, better than the United States, better than Canada, better than any country in South America. The Swedish approach, which is very close in spirit to the Great Barrington Declaration, which is protect the vulnerable older people who are at most at risk, but then allow the rest of society to go on without draconian measures to try to and futile measures to try to suppress the spread of it. That protects human life best, and that's what we found in Sweden. Even from the United States, you can see Florida had lower all cause excess deaths since the start of the pandemic than California has. I mean,
and they had the senior population.
Yeah, even if you do the age adjustment. I mean, the key thing is the lockdowns were harmful. The lockdowns killed, and they did not protect human life against COVID.
Well, listen, I wish we could talk more. I'd like to know what your thoughts are. What are other issues that science is that experts' voices need to be heard that are not being heard right now? How confident are you that we've learned lessons from the past? I only got about 30 seconds. Do you want to reply, or let's just save it for next time?
I mean, no. Well, I mean, just very quickly, the COVID pandemic pointed to very, very severe problems in the way we manage public health, the way we manage and fund science. The key thing is we need radical transparency, and we need checks and balances on public health.
Absolutely.
And we need decentralization. Basic American ideas have to be restored to restore public health to where it should be.
Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, thank you so much, Professor of Health and Policy at Stanford University. We are so grateful for you. All right, friends, that wraps up this edition. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.